This is F1 Debrief. The hotel did a great job today. Coming up this week, we discuss the little action from Abu Dhabi, some circuit and team news, plus catch up with some great feedback.
I have to start this show with a shout out.
Okay.
Which is unusual.
No, it isn't.
Oh, isn't it? Do we always do that?
Yeah.
This time, I promised that I would shout out Turkey Machine, who started commenting during the summer, and he said this week, can I get a shout out from Mr. C? I want to get a mention because he's a legend.
What?
Yeah. Fact.
A legend? I think that's going a bit overboard.
Thank you, Turkey Machine.
That's the way to get a shout out from you, is it? That's, call you a legend?
That's the way to start a show.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Bruno Senna, as Campos Meta have confirmed they have signed him for 2010. They say they are honoured to give him a seat and they were impressed with how fast he's moved through the motorsport ranks.
I think it's great for Formula One that the Senna name returns. I think the good news that he's going to a very small team with very low expectations means he can't ruin the Senna legacy. We can just blame the team and the car and not the driver.
It's been a bad week for Heidfeld, who apparently got a bit emotional towards the end of the race today. Autosport reported an emotional Heidfeld said he found it hard to keep his concentration during the final moments of the race. I can understand why, of course, the last laps for BMW, but Heidfeld doesn't seem like the kind to get emotional, bless him.
It might mean that he really has no options for next year. This may have been Nick Heidfeld's last race. I wasn't considering it before, but to get that emotional about driving for BMW seems a little bit odd, doesn't it?
It's been a good week for Braun chef Dave Freeman, who held up a pit board at the end of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix saying, "Will you marry me, Fatner?" Apparently, Fatner was not at the race, but saw the proposal on TV and replied via email. The answer was yes.
That's brilliant news. And also makes my proposal look quite rubbish.
Yeah. It's been a bad week for window cleaners. On the Williams Eye Witness blog, they noted that there are 5,400 panes of glass on the Yas Hotel.
On the Yas Hotel alone.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine doing that job.
That's going to take a while.
Never ended. I'll tell you what, I didn't see one of them all race. Clearly the windows were clean before we got here.
News and views.
So there's been some Donington Park action or inaction this week.
Lacking action.
Yeah. Monday was another deadline and this one passed without any activity from the circuit. And it seems as though that really was the last deadline.
Bernie says yes. He says it's over, it's done, there is no more.
He came out and said, there's no Donington, they've missed the deadline, which we kept extending for them.
Which is true. Every other week was a new Donington deadline.
Yeah. It's a surprise that he just came out and said, no more, I've had enough.
I don't think anyone believes that he's still prepared to negotiate. And if no money is forthcoming, that's going to upset Bernie, isn't it? I mean, that's all you're going to take to annoy the man.
Immediately, talks resumed with Silverstone. Damon Hill was talking today about teaming up with Abu Dhabi. I didn't really understand that.
Weird. During the BBC post-race forum, he seemed to suggest that there was a discussion about the idea of Abu Dhabi teaming up with Silverstone for some kind of joint venture. Now, I guess when Damon turned up to Abu Dhabi, he was a bit shocked when he compared the Grand Prix that he oversees compared to what Abu Dhabi had put together. So no doubt it was food for thought for him. I don't quite know how a tie-up or twinning the Grand Prix will really help, but we might have to look more into that story.
Martin Brundle was also talking about the future of the British Grand Prix, and he thinks that Bernie is going to string it out until Christmas. So that's a whole other couple of months before we learn what the future is. And he thinks that it's possible Bernie will tell the teams, you don't want 19 races, so you might lose Silverstone.
Right.
And therefore it's in their hands and not...
Martin has Bernie sussed out on this one, and I can see that playing out exactly as he's described. We've got a couple more months of bargaining, and then it'll come down to the teams. And the problem with that is it'll make the teams look bad. They're going to have to bend over backwards to have Silverstone, because obviously all the teams want to be racing there, and Bernie will end up getting his 19 races and not looking bad. And that's the way he plays it, and I think Martin's on the money, and we've just got to sit and wait for that to play out now.
There was also sad news this week as Tom Wheatcroft, the owner of Donington Park, he died yesterday. He was 87 and had been suffering from a long illness, but he will be missed.
It's a shame he stuck around long enough, actually, to see what Simon Gillett did to his circuit.
Yeah.
And hopefully Mr. Gillett will pay a high price for what he attempted to do to the British Grand Prix and how he managed to mess it up the way he did. And it's very sad to hear that about Tom Wheatcroft. We went to the Donington Grand Prix collection, the collection he put together. We went there, I think, within the first couple of weeks of Side Podcast, didn't we? We went there, had a look around, made a video.
Our first video was from there.
It was, so a lot of good memories from that, and I'm glad that he put the collection together. And he will be missed.
Williams are being really, really sneaky, aren't they? Everything they do at the moment seems to be like they're trying to get into the FIA's favour more and more.
Everything Frank does would please Max. Now, Max has obviously become John, so I assume that everything that would please Max also would please John. And Frank Williams, he's doing his best to bend over backwards to position his team within a great shot of being the FIA's favoured team of the future.
It's very bizarre because I wouldn't have ever thought them to be that. But this week, they announced that Williams F1 and the Qatar Science and Technology Park are setting up two programmes. One is to do with flywheel energy regeneration. So that's part of the company they bought to take part in KERS this year, which didn't work out so well.
KERS that didn't race.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other programme is developing a simulator for race and for road use.
Now, I'm assuming that Williams also inked the deal or confirmed the deal with Cosworth this week. And that means that they are using the FIA's preferred engine partner in the back of their car. And one would assume that the plan is to mate that engine with their KERS flywheel system, which is part of this new tie-up, and therefore produce what will presumably become the preferred flywheel solution for Formula One in 2011.
It does seem very odd. It just doesn't fit with Williams, because you expect someone like Mercedes and McLaren, they do make cars, and you can see why they would want to be supplying things and being really high up there as a technology company. Sure. Williams have always been like, we are the independent team, we're only here to race and supply the whole of the grid with KERS.
I think Frank knows, well, I can only assume Frank has fallen out with the manufacturers, and he's fallen out with them in a big way, probably related to the fact he got kicked out of FOTA, possibly, or certainly something to do with the FOTA organisation. And now he's aligning his team with the governing body because he no longer trusts the manufacturers. McLaren, MES make the standard ECU, and I wouldn't be surprised if that doesn't come up for tender in the future. And maybe the standard ECU can be coupled with a flywheel system and an engine. And with Cosworth and Williams, you might have the complete package for the ideal FIA Formula One team of the future.
So more and more it's becoming a standard series then.
A spec series.
Lovely.
In some ways, that's, well, with engine homologation and all the things that are going on in that front and cost saving, it's going to lean in that direction. And maybe Frank Williams has seen the future. Maybe he knows what's coming. And so that's where he's aligning himself.
Also, in not even slightly related news, USF1 announced they'll be using Motorland Aragon as their European base next year.
Long suspected, but now confirmed.
Yes.
And it's another team that puts themselves within very close reach of a circuit. Now, I don't know what advantage this is going to have to the new teams, but if you notice, all of them are picking, because they've essentially, they're brand new, they're starting from scratch, they can pick the location that seems most favourable to them, and they're all picking locations within walking distance of racetracks. Now,
do they know something about testing that we don't?
Possibly.
Because I hope they do.
You would you would assume in today's restrictive testing environment that that wouldn't be a huge advantage. However, Ferrari have in the past made a lot of use out of having a test track right on their doorstep, and more these new teams are making sure they have that facility. You've got the Lotus Malaysia tie-up, whereby they're moving, they're building a technology park next to Sepang, and now you've got the same with Motorland and USF1.
Do you think it will make it more likely there'll be a race there in the future?
I don't know, actually. Is it Tilke designed?
It is.
Probably that's the way it's going, which is a shame. But I'm sure he wouldn't have put an awful lot of effort into something that wouldn't one day end up as a Formula One track. RG in the comments does note that Aragon was in fact designed by Tilke, but he thought it looked like a half-decent track, if he's being fair about it, and one day he feels it might have a chance of replacing Barcelona. That wouldn't be a bad thing in my eyes, because Barcelona isn't a great circuit, and if Tilke's managed to somehow make a masterpiece, then all for it.
The race.
We're going to start this section with talk about the track and the event itself, because it's good to start on a positive vibe before we slate the whole thing.
Event is a really good choice of words, because I got the impression that this weekend was all about the event and the race was secondary. But tell me what you liked first.
Well, it's a very pretty track, and it's not like Valencia or Singapore Because there's different colours there. Quite a lot of colours there, actually.
It certainly wasn't bland.
No. I did think the paint on the track itself made it look like Paul Rickard.
Yes.
With the blue and the stripes.
They so stole that look from Paul Rickard.
And then obviously there was the hotel that changed colour.
Which was fantastic.
Which was pretty.
It was relaxing. It was therapeutic. It kind of took your eyes off the race, sadly. In the end, I think the effort was put in. And you can't blame the organisers because they did all they had to do. Nothing went wrong. There were no complaints from anybody at the track. There were no complaints about parking.
That's because nothing happened.
Prices. Everything went off smoothly.
We did have a good comment from Matt, which kind of summed it up. He said, "The problem I have with Abu Dhabi is the same problem I have with China and Malaysia. The place is so big, it makes the cars look small and slightly inconsequential."
I think that sums it up very well.
They are quite important to
you
the whole thing.
You build these magnificent buildings and this wonderful architecture and the gorgeous look of the place, and you get these tiny little F1 cars going around and they just don't look important at all, whereas really you want the cars to be the biggest thing there. The big spectacle is all about the cars and the drivers. That's what you come to watch. You haven't really come to watch grand designs.
No, although it wasn't all perfect, the architecture, because there was a bridge that was a bit worrying.
Really dangerous. Really, really, really stupidly dangerous. Normally at racetracks, when you have a bridge, it's enclosed so people can't throw things over it or throw themselves over it onto the track. And not only did you have a bridge which had was completely open, I mean, it had glass sides, which was useful because obviously you could see the action going on around you, but I mean, you could easily drop something over the edge of it. There was also hotel rooms which lent out, the balconies of the hotel rooms lent out over the track. That is beyond insanity. I can't believe the FIA actually passed that as a safe circuit with that in place.
No, it's like the grandstand at Singapore where the track goes underneath it and you just think people could throw anything on
there. Yes, it's obviously a new thing that's coming on to original circuits. I mean, Silverstone, we know the bridge is enclosed. You can't throw anything. As soon as you enter that bridge, it's an enclosed case. You can't
also, you're too busy holding on for dear life.
Well, there's a risk of death, obviously, crossing the Silverstone Bridge. But the thing is, it's a safe bridge in terms of what's going on around you. You can't accidentally drop your keys over the edge, and you very much could in Abu Dhabi.
I think it probably did have the right effect, though, on things like tourism and stuff. Quite enticing.
If the effect you're after is to sell Abu Dhabi as a holiday destination, I think they did Judith Chalmers proud. The BBC put on a great holiday programme this weekend. It was wall-to-wall, backdrop, and it made me want to visit Abu Dhabi. So sold, absolutely worked. As for the racing, not so much.
Now, before we get on to the actual racing, we should say that Toyota released a statement saying that Glock wouldn't be racing for them. And the only reason that is interesting, I mean, obviously, it's quite annoying for Glock not to be able to finish the season, and we think maybe he won't be driving for Toyota anymore.
Almost certainly not driving for the Toyota again.
But the only reason that is actually interesting is that they released a statement and then they changed their statement.
What happened?
Well, at first,
I was asleep when this was released, so I'm glad that yourself and the commenters picked this up.
At first it said, "Due to differing medical opinions regarding Timo's fitness to race, the team is not prepared to take any risks regarding his health."
Differing medical opinions?
No, they have their own doctor, so I'm assuming...
And he's a good doctor. He's a really good
doctor. Well, he helps everyone else, doesn't he? So I'm assuming either he said no and the doctor said yes, or the other way around.
Now, the cynic in me says the other non-Toyota doctor said Glock is fine. And then Toyota's doctor, maybe under pressure from somebody else within the team, said, actually, it would be really good for us if Kobayashi got another run. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah, because they then changed it. And, well, they left in the bit about not being prepared to take any risks, but they left out the differing medical opinions bit.
I think the PR man, maybe the PR man didn't get the message, or maybe he wanted us to get another message. I don't know. However, Mr. Glock, he never got a chance to drive, did he?
In the comments, RG said, Glock complained about his leg. Toyota complained about his back.
There's a difference of opinion there.
Yeah.
However, I don't think Glock looked that fussed, so therefore we must be able to conclude that he's got another drive for next year, and he's done with Toyota as they are done with him.
He didn't miss much this weekend, though, it's fair to say. On watching it back, he's probably like, I'm not that bothered,
actually. The best seat in the house.
I would say that it was the dullest Friday free practice I've ever seen.
What a waste of a Friday.
I think it was probably the dullest Saturday and Sunday as well.
Saturday... Yes. Well, I don't know. See, I thought Lewis's pole lap was fantastic, and I wouldn't want to have missed that pole lap because he poured out so much speed, he surprised even himself.
Yeah.
So that's good. That was worth watching. There weren't very many dramas. Fisichella again failed to impress. Ferrari again were very, very slow in what now must be considered the Ferrari's second heartland. Because did you see the Ferrari building? The Ferrari world.
It does look like it's structure. Taking over the track.
It looks like it's going to eat Formula One, yeah. Doesn't it? It's coming to get you. And Ferrari needed to do very well in Abu Dhabi, and they failed to impress everybody. So that was a shame. I thought qualifying was okay and was certainly better than Sunday. But in the end, it didn't even live up to our previous qualifying expectations from this year.
I mean, throughout the weekend, it was more interesting to be saying, oh, this is the last... whatever session it was, last free practice, whatever, than it was actually talking about the sessions themselves. But it is worth noting that it was the last time we had fuel weights.
Oh.
Because they won't be doing that next
year. They're gone. Refueling is gone for 2010, and that was the last time that we'll see them. And I have to admit that I think if you look back to the beginning of this year, I may have taken the mickey out of the idea of announcing fuel weights.
We weren't impressed with that at all.
No, we thought it would ruin Sundays because you lose the anticipation, and now they're taking it away. I have to admit that I'm missing it.
Although having said that, it is this year also that we've been like, qualifying is awesome and Sunday is rubbish.
Yes.
I don't know if the two are related. They probably aren't, but it's just another thing to note.
It is. That's true. And qualifying has been exceptional this year, except for this race, but previously it has been, and it's been much better than the racing.
Even though qualifying wasn't exceptional this race, it still was the best bit of the weekend.
Yes, it's just the rest of the weekend was just dire.
Another exciting thing that happened, Ron Dennis turned up.
Define exciting in that phrase.
He was there.
It was significant.
It happened.
It's not lost on anybody that the first race after the president of the FIA stood down and was replaced by another president, that Ron Dennis decided it was safe to turn up in the paddock. It's McLaren's second home because they have a lot of sponsorship and a huge amount of investment coming from the region. So it makes sense for Ron to be around. And I thought when he was interviewed by Lee McKenzie, he might have let slip that he actually still has quite a lot to do with the McLaren racing team. He said, I still have a hand in all this. And then he tried to backtrack a little bit and say, actually, you know, I'm looking at the bigger picture. I think he might still be very much involved in McLaren F1 and may have let a little bit too much slip with that interview.
In the parade lap, pre-race, we did a two-hour special. It was quite good. The replay is available on sidepodcast.com if you haven't seen it. We talked to Four Star, who was at the track.
That's brilliant. A second time this year, the parade lap has come on leaps and bounds, and we have to thank Alex for hooking up that Four Star. I think he works with Four Star.
Yep.
And he managed to hook up a phone call live from the circuit, and should we listen to it now?
It is me. It is Four Star at the end of the line.
Four Star!
Hello. Hello, the world.
How fantastic is that? You are live!
I'm very nervous, very nervous. Long time listener, first time caller. Well, you've come at a very good time because we've just finished a really brilliant Porsche supercar race, which was, there was a battle for first right to the end, and then there was a bit of argy-bargy, and they swapped the placings literally as they were getting to the podium, so that was a pretty exciting stuff. So now there's a bit of calm, and we've got a driver's parade, apparently.
What is the atmosphere like? Because it looks like, from the TV, that there aren't that many people around.
It's pretty thin. I mean, we've been here for a good hour because we've been in traffic. It's thin at the moment. It's going to be one of those where it suddenly goes woof and there are 50,000 people here, I think. But, without swearing, hot.
We were so impressed that Four Star was calling us from the track. We actually decided to name that corner that he was sitting at Four Star Corner.
And, well, that's brilliant because... it has no other name, does it? No one's bothered. You went to all the effort of designing a racetrack, reclaiming the land, spending billions and billions of dollars on a circuit. Could you not just have the creative nous to come up with some corner names?
Well, Four Star said he was given a map. It didn't even have turn numbers on it.
How can you build a circuit and not even think of one original name? Singapore, they held a competition to name three corners. Not even all of the corners. They're going to do, what, three a year?
Should have just asked us.
It's just it is pathetic, and I'm so disappointed that nobody... when I say nobody, Tilke is what I really mean. Mr. Tilke can't come up with any original corner names, and it's a shame.
So I suppose we should actually talk about the race then, because we've managed to avoid it so far.
I was hoping we wouldn't actually have to talk about it.
There's only a couple of things worth mentioning, really.
Let's see how quickly we can work through it.
I'll just swear he went to the wrong pit box.
That was hilarious.
It was brilliant. He afterwards, because he also retired later on, I think he must have run out of fuel.
No, he had gearbox trouble.
Oh, okay. So he retired, and afterwards they were talking to him, and he said, yeah, so this happened and this happened, and then I went there. And then the team weren't ready for me, and that's why I went to the Red Bull pit box.
I can't really explain it. Apparently, he had gearbox trouble, and I guess he was asked to come in, or he decided he was going to come in, and he'd had enough with his gearbox issues. The team weren't ready for him, and he obviously didn't spot them because he was looking for the blue overalls, and he went flying past and instead managed to end up heading towards the Red Bull pit crew.
He went straight through.
Well, they were waiting for Vettel. So obviously they were in the pit lane and he mistook them for his team. And they suddenly panicked, realizing that...
That's not the driver.
That's not who we want. Yeah. For the past year, and possibly for the past 2 years, we have been moaning the fact that Toro Rosso look exactly like Red Bull Racing. And eventually they were going to become unstuck. And finally, their own driver got confused what team he was driving for because all their liveries looked the blooming same. And at last, they might have finally got the message that they need to do something about it next year because it is useless. And I don't blame Alex Suarez at all, although it is a bit stupid of him. It's not the team's fault for not being out in the pit lane. The fact of the matter is they got to do something about their livery. It's embarrassing and it's useless. And finally, they became unstuck by it. It would have been really bad, really, really bad if he was completely confused and just stopped there. Because obviously they couldn't have put the tyres on him. What could they have done?
Well, no, of course not.
It would have been a complete
disaster. I'm surprised that there isn't like a fine or something because yes. They are two different teams. And what do you do if you just go and stop in someone else's pit box? You completely ruin their race because Vettel wasn't that far behind.
No, he was coming in the pit lane. That's why they were out and expecting him. And they would have absolutely deserved to lose the race for Vettel by picking the wrong livery. And it would have served them right. And I would have no sympathy for them. It was only by the skin of their teeth that they got away with it.
Let's move on from that then. Kobayashi, he was good again. Bit of overtaking.
I was very impressed with him. He set up Jenson Button amazingly well. I got the impression Jenson was slightly scared of Kobayashi after the last race in Brazil.
Yeah, because it was Button that was complaining about him wiggling about in the braking
zone. You did wonder whether or not Jenson just thought, I'm not getting involved in this.
Yeah.
I'm going to end up in the wall. Just go away.
Hamilton, he had to retire, which was a shame because I think that would have been a really good fight.
Yeah, we were robbed there.
Yeah, I think he'd already lost the lead. I think he would... had come to terms with that.
He certainly hadn't made enough of a gap. And what happened to the pace? How could you be so good in qualifying and then lose so much
speed?
Just
all went wrong today.
Overnight.
It was broken.
Yeah, he didn't pull out enough of a gap. It would have been an interesting battle between Hamilton and Jensen in the end, but we were denied that and they retired the guy.
He missed out on what was a great last couple of laps.
Relatively speaking, yes, it was quite good. It was quite exciting. And it's a shame that Jensen couldn't get past Webber. I thought Webber drove very well. And it was a clean fight between two clean races. And that's good to see. I just think in an ideal race, that wouldn't be the highlight.
No.
It was a good climax, but it was for second and third. And obviously, there was no championship points in it. So we can't begrudge them for putting on a show for us. Because without that, it would have just been diabolical, wouldn't it?
It would have been. And actually, it still was, even with that. We had a voicemail from Lukey, who summed up the race for us.
Hello, Lukey here to tell you about how bad today's race was. It was rubbish. And I'm not trying to steal Christine's rubbish, but yeah, it was rubbish. And I'm sorry, Nick, it was rubbish. There's some serious low levels of quality in modern Formula One tracks, but Abu Dhabi reached a new low today, and I'm just trying to think of the highlights from today's race. So let's see. Well, the hotel went orange at one point. That was really good. I really enjoyed when the hotel went orange, and it went red as well, which was really impressive. And there was parts when the hotel was blue and sparkly. In general, today the hotel did a great job, and I'm proud of the hotel on top of the track because it really showed off how the architecture, I think that's right, around a modern Formula One track is obviously now more important than the race, obviously, because you've got the green building in Valencia, which is awesome. You've got the general nothingness of Bahrain, apart from one tower. Just remarkable stuff. But yeah, so great job by the architecture today, but the race sucked. It was awful. This just... You just wondered that it'd be so much more, but then you knew it was going to be bad. I'm just trying to think of the highlights. And no, there's that one last lap. So, a review of Abu Dhabi. Yeah, at least you don't have to see it for another year. Oh well, Formula One's over with for another year. Let's see what next year brings, I suppose. Bye-bye.
Lukey, I love that thought.
At least we don't have to see it for another year.
That's the phrase I liked, yep. It's terrible, but it only comes around once a year, and there's plenty of other good tracks on the calendar, so it doesn't really matter.
You know what? I've just realised. Abu Dhabi makes Hungary look good.
That's a fair point. It makes a lot of places look good. And the thing is, when we come to next season, we're going to go, it could be worse. It could be Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
It's set a new standard. It's set a new low in poor race circuits.
Fantasy Racers.
In fifth place, Rhino F1 Team with 13.914. Fourth, Tilster Racing with 13.991. Third, Bushy's Bullets with 14.350. Second, Celtic Racing with 15.756. And first, Catch Potato with 17.011.
She did it.
That makes Cathy our champion.
Wow.
Which isn't a surprise, but brilliant.
Delivered. It's been a given since summer, hasn't it? We thought Danny had sent the trophy to Cathy a long, long time ago, but apparently he hasn't.
No, but do you know what? Apart from winning, Cathy also had teams in 6th, 10th and 17th.
And she finished over 1,000 points in front of her nearest rival. That is domination.
Yeah, really, really good. Stephen Roy, who got all these facts and figures for me, because he's very kind like that, he said, this leads me to believe there is some skill involved and my poor position is just not bad luck.
What does that make mine?
Yeah, well, that is also true. My team finished with 10,246 points, which is about 7,000 less than Cathy.
Quite a gap.
Which is rubbish. But I did finish in 100th place, which is a nice round figure. So
well done you.
That makes me happy. Stephen also pointed out, to make you feel a bit better, because you are a lot further back, in 595th place and last is Must Be Worse Than Mr. C, who scored 24 points today for a total of 263. So there you go.
That's quite
there is someone behind you.
24 points.
I'm not quite sure how you manage that, really.
That's shockingly bad. Thank you for being worse than me.
But if 595th was the last team, that means we almost reached 600.
What a fantastic number. That's an incredible achievement. And what a turnout for 2009. And thank you to everybody who took part this year. It was fantastic.
It was really good, especially when we started doing the team press releases.
Have you got any more of those?
Yeah, we've got some nice season-ending ones. Amy, well, this is not a great one to start with, but Amy said, got a little bored near the end, not sure if I'll play next year.
Oh, dear.
But we will convince her, it's fine.
She's easily led.
Lou said, Honda's Helping Hand have had a very successful season, finishing 74th. We dropped several places in the later part of the year, but I'm proud of the effort and passion the team have put into their work. Given his success this year and our productive contract discussions, we are pleased to confirm that Jensen will be joining us next year. We are looking forward to talks with the other drivers within the next 133 days, but we are in no rush.
133 days.
That is thinking ahead. RG said, only 327 points in Abu Dhabi. No matter how hard I try, I can't flip and make that stupid biggest fallers list. Season in review. Well, to be fair, we focused on the 2010 campaign after Malaysia. You could tell I wasn't too bothered when I signed Badoa and then kept Badoa on for Spa. Finished in 242nd place, which is worse than last year. I'm no expert, but I think Cathy won. And I'm proud to be a part of Team Side Podcast's second win in a row in the private leagues, even though I was so bad, I didn't help them at all.
We did it. We haven't mentioned that. We did it.
We did. Well, thanks to Cathy, obviously.
Cathy did it.
Yeah. Journey has said, the season has ended on a flat note for Scuderia Mil Miglia, missing the Abu Dhabi deadline. The team does finish with more than 10,000 points to finish 110th in the SBC League in the 2009 set. That means I beat him.
Wow.
Woohoo, I just realised that. Stephen says, team victory or bust, finished the season by breaking through the 10,000 barrier just. Team victory or bust? Bust.
Bust.
Gavin's team, Rubber Goat Racing, he says they had a decent season, finished 39th in the Side Podcast League. That's really very good. Rubber Goat Racing congratulates Cathy and Couch Potato, who took full advantage of a big loophole in the rules to build up a big lead, which nobody could catch up. They are worthy champions this year. However, we will be back in 2010, confident that we'll have the right lineup to take advantage of major rule changes, which will be implemented next year. So we look forward to the Bahrain Grand Prix in 19 weeks' time.
Sounds like brawn.
Eric the Baker's team Need More Dough joined the season with the Italian GP and they did their part to keep Mr. C up in the rankings. Manager expectations were met with acceptable results by the drivers. Exceedingly low expectations made that an easy thing.
I do appreciate people bumping me up.
Rich says, today, team sandbagging had its worst outing all year and nearly made it on the list of biggest fallers. Bit of an exaggeration, but did fall 67 places in the main league. The team would like to thank all its sponsors during the season, that is best described as consistent, barring the last result, and was finally placed 57th in the Sidepodcast League and was still in the top 300 overall with 10,862 points. Guile says Rosso Corsa is glad to see the year finishing after a very bad first part of the season was followed by an awful second part. The combination of Rubens' bad luck, Alonso and Heidfeld's lack of a proper car, and an injured Massa just when the Ferrari was going up result in the team getting into the 453rd position in Sidepodcast League, 3,821st overall. We are proud, however, of our drivers and we wish them the best of luck for next year. That sounds like he's sacking them all. We want also to congratulate not only the winning team, Couch Potato, but also Mr. C's team that beat us fair and square.
Thank you, Guile.
John said, having kept themselves in the top 10 at the start of the season, Force Honda B team have struggled to stay in the top 25, but have now dropped down onto the lowest of the lows, 32nd.
Oh, well, that's just a terrible performance.
I don't think we can feel sorry for you there when I'm in 100th. We're going to have to change that tagline to 100th in our own league.
Yes.
And our champion, Kathy, said, like I said before in the comments, Fantasy Racers really made me enjoy this year much more. My favourite driver was a bit pants this season, but because of Fantasy Racers, I had 9 other drivers to pay attention and cheer for. So thank you very much to Danny for the competition and for the 4 t-shirts she got.
We should say a big, big thank you to Danny because he does all this for us. He puts on a great Fantasy Racers league. And despite the rule changes being skewed by Kathy's domination,
yes,
I think he did put in a great effort. And also, I'd just like to point out, Lou suggests I didn't have any drivers this week. I did put in an effort this week. It just didn't work out for me.
Bless you. Danny has worked very hard this year, like you say, and he is taking a couple of months off.
I don't blame him. No. So should we. We should take a leaf out of Danny's book.
Yes. But I would just like to say in the future that if Danny needs advice for how the rules and regulations of Fantasy Racers should go, don't ask us.
He did ask us for this year.
Yeah.
We ruined it.
Well, people haven't been that impressed overall. It's been a bit mixed reviews.
I found it really hard. As we said before, it rewarded those who put the effort in and I didn't have time to put the effort in. And that was why I did really badly, actually. But yeah, I think some of the suggestions for regulation changes this year came from Side Podcast
comments. We can only blame ourselves.
So we're nothing. Just don't ask us.
We've talked about the race briefly, given a few thoughts on it. And now we'd like to hear from Turkey Machine, who is your favourite commenter, apparently.
I'm a legend.
Yes. Who also has some thoughts on the race.
Hey, Side Podcast. It's Turkey Machine from the live comments. Abu Dhabi. Yeah. Like the circuit. I saw the onboard laps and thought, yeah, this looks like a real driver circuit. And then I come to actually watching practice and the race, and I sort of think it's more like a merge between Bahrain and Valencia. It takes the bad points of Valencia and tries to take the good points of Bahrain and hasn't quite mishmashed it together. But then again, this is Herman Tilke's job, so, you know, it's just his job. But I like the pit exit. I was just surprised no driver managed to screw it up that badly and cause a big accident. I'm in two minds as to whether it's a big yay or a big nay, and I think it's just kind of a so-so at the moment. But trying to overtake Webber at the end of the race was interesting, considering they were both guaranteed podiums, and if they'd screwed it up, they wouldn't have been. Bruce has still got it, despite the fact he was probably half-blasted last week. Kobayashi, he's probably, 99.5% guaranteed a Toyota drive for next year, if Toyota decide to actually commit to next year. He's put truly in the shade this weekend completely. So, yeah, 2010's looking like an awesome season, but I don't know whether it's going to actually live up to the expectations I have of it. It's 19 weeks away, and I hate Lajard for actually saying that. It's just wrong. I want testing to start now kind of thing, but that's just the way it is. I'll listen to the podcast and hope I get around there. Christine, love you. Bye.
Ah, Christine, love you.
There you go. I had to get my shout out there too.
Legend, love you. Suddenly, you're not so critical of Turkey Machine, are you?
No, that was a really good voicemail. Lots of different points in there.
Yes, I agree. It was a shame that nobody binned it in the tunnel because I was looking forward to that. I wasn't looking forward to the aftermath, but I just wanted to see what on earth people planned to do because I'm sure they hadn't really accounted for it. The race in the end was great, and that's all you can say about that circuit.
We had some feedback this week on Facebook. Dave Cameron left me a message. Not the David Cameron, I'm thinking. a different one. He said, "Hey, Christine, just seen Morris Hamilton's tweet that Schumacher looks likely to become F1 commissioner. Surely if Todd really does live by his teamwork slogan, he would consult FOTA on selecting an appropriate commissioner. I'll tell you what, though, my fears over Ari's fair like my hair slogan were proven right."
Oh, that Dave.
Yes.
Yes, he was
Not
right.
Not the actual David Cameron.
That's a good point. If Todd is that open and he's into teamwork, maybe he should be asking other people's opinion. Maybe he will not make that decision all by himself.
Also on Facebook, Tony Behar said, "Devoted fan of your programme. Thank you for all the great work. Just had to say."
Couldn't hold back.
No.
He couldn't hold back.
I like that.
Thank you, Tony.
Just had to say it.
Got to get it off my chest. I have to admit it. I'm ashamed to say it. I quite like you.
In reply to last week's show, where we were pondering Ross Brawn's whereabouts, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
Rowley said in the comments, "Ross Brawn is in the US. Combine that with the story about the Mobil sponsorship, and I think Ross Brawn was in the US to get to ExxonMobil to talk about the deal."
That's an interesting thought.
What is the story about the Mobil sponsorship then?
I haven't got actually that much information on it, but there's a potential. We know that Mercedes are putting all their eggs in the Brawn basket, and we think that they're moving away from McLaren.
Except that they said today they weren't.
They may have said that, but I don't believe it. There's another rumour going around that Mobil might up sticks and follow Mercedes to Brawn. Therefore, Ross Brawn could have been in discussions with ExxonMobil in the States. So that's a great thought from Rowley. And that may be why he was there.
An email I had this week was from Lewis. He said, "Dear Christine and Mr. C, I've been listening to your podcast since January when I got my iPod Touch. I like to think that I'm your youngest listener as I turned 14 in August. There's still probably someone younger than me. Seeing your website and listening to your shows inspired me to do my own blog, and that's at untitledf1show.wordpress.com. If you get the chance, please look at it. It would be great if you could. I really like the community. I love talking F1 and otherwise. I think you should bring back Side Pod Quiz. I would do it from the live comments when you do your live show. I look forward to hearing from you and listening to your shows through the off season."
Ah, the off season. Yes.
That's where coming. We are.
Thank you, Lewis, for that. And another blog I'm gonna have to check out. Every show, another blog I've got to subscribe to. They're popping up all over the place. So I shall do that as soon as the show's finished and hopefully leave a comment. And yes, the off season is coming. We'll talk about that in a bit, I hope. Talking of young listeners, we had another one leave us a voicemail. This slightly distraught listener, I feel. A man who maybe called the wrong number, and possibly he should have called the Samaritans and not Sci Podcast. But have we got a voicemail from RG?
Hey, Sci Podcast, it's RG here. You know, sorry if you can hear the TV again. Turned it down this time. Just trying to talk about man of the season and watching the last race for BMW and Sauber, and you know, such a shame, really. You know, being a fan for them for so many years now, I remember. Watching them in the first race, and liking the colour of the car, that's how they came to start supporting. And then the crew has sort of tried F1 more. And, you know, looking at now, 4 years later, quite sad to see the end gone, you know, this race.
That cut off a bit abruptly. I was expecting more.
Well, the thing is, there was actually a 6-minute voicemail from RG, mostly along the same lines. And
I feel really bad for him.
I do feel sorry for RG, but also I'm not sure we would have any listeners left if we had six minutes.
It needed our tune in the background.
Yes.
That's what it was lacking. I do feel, I didn't realise that RG felt so strongly about BMW, and it is a shame that they are gone. It was their last race.
Yep.
And
well, just like Heidfeld was upset and RG is upset. I imagine there are lots of fans out there who yes. are upset.
We do hope, obviously, that the team will get it together for 2010 and that somehow they will find a way into next season and that they will make it, and that the support from CADBAC will come through and they'll be allowed an entry via one means or another, because it would be a huge, huge loss to Formula One if the team from Hinwil vanished, because it's just not
so much
right.
BMW, but Sauber, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the team from Hinwil is the best way of describing them, because it's a collection of people who have done a fantastic job in Formula One. They sealed their first win last year. This season hasn't gone too well, but it's not bad enough that they should just be dropped by the parent company. And it's a shame that that's how manufacturers think about this sport. And we do wish them all the best, and all the best to RG too.
On a bit of a happier note, Rishi went to Abu Dhabi.
Another one.
This weekend. We didn't get a call from him, so we couldn't name a grandstand after him or a corner after him. But he did send me a couple of emails throughout the weekend, and I think he's going to do a guest post as well.
Ooh, like
so I don't want to give it all away, but here is an excerpt from the emails he sent. Hi, Christine. I'm in Abu Dhabi right now. Arrived here about 2 hours ago, and the whole airport and city is covered with all this Formula One. You can really sense the passion, pride, and most noticeably the amount of money that they have invested into this event. On approach to land, we were treated to a perfect view of the circuit and the glorious Yas Marina Hotel within moments of touchdown. David Coulthard was on my flight too, and so far the atmosphere, even without visiting the track, has captured the whole city. I am jealous of that.
I like all these drivers flying public transport, not on their own private jets.
Mm.
It's a new thing for this year.
Budget cuts.
Yes, drivers saving money. Surely David Coulthard can afford to get there under his own steam, couldn't he?
Maybe. Maybe he just likes to be with the people. A second email came to me and it said, it's now past midnight here, had a truly epic day. Extremely tiring though, the whole business of a pit lane walk and autograph session had huge amount of demand, but I saw Jensen, Lewis, Sebastian Vettel, Mark Webber, Rubens and Heikki Kovalainen and got some of their autographs too. It was a mind-blowing experience and was followed by an astonishing Beyoncé concert in the main arena at Ferrari World. I was not expecting much of the concert, but it too completely blew me away. Leaving at about 9:30, which is 5:30 UK time, tomorrow morning to head off for a day of watching practice for F1, GP2 and the other two series as well.
What a riot. I'm absolutely looking forward to the guest post and pictures. I've not seen any of Rich's pictures, but I bet there's some fine ones in that collection.
Housekeeping.
This time last week, we launched the Top Gear competition, our very first competition. And we launched it on Monday night. It's running for 7 days, which means this Monday is the cutoff point.
That means by the time you've listened to the show, if you're not listening to it live, you've missed the cutoff point.
It may actually be about 2 minutes after the podcast is released.
How annoying would that be?
That is quite annoying.
It's a fantastic competition, though. You get the Top Gear tickets and you get there's a chance to drive with a stunt driver.
Ride around in a stunt car. It's quite an easy question to answer. So if you haven't already and you do hear this in time, make sure you head on over.
If you've taken the time and the effort to join us in the live show, then you have an advantage over everybody else who's listening to the replay. So it just shows you should always make that effort on a Sunday evening to come and join us. And if you haven't already, please do leave us your answers, and hopefully we're in with a shot. And there's only, literally, as we said before last week, it's only amongst side podcast listeners, so it's a small collection of entrants, and you might be in with a good shot of winning. We did it. We released the homepage we've been promising to deliver for as long as I can remember.
Last week you said it would be Wednesday, and I think you'll find it was actually the early hours of Thursday.
That's true. I did say on Wednesday, there was a question in the comments about when on earth is it going to be released, because I was promised it Wednesday, and I said I'm not going to sleep until it's finished, and I didn't get to sleep until it was finished, even though it was 6 o'clock in the morning when it finally went out. That's how late it was going. It's so very fine, but we did deliver.
You say finished.
Started.
Yes. Really, what we've done is stripped everything away.
Yes, but made it really, really, really quick. I'm so pleased with the speed that our homepage loads, in part in comparison to what it was before, although that was a terrible benchmark because that was just too slow. Now it's as fast, or in some cases faster, than most of the other F1 blogs I've compared it to. So really pleased with how it's looking. And there's more to do. We're not going
to
rest.
Lots more to do.
The off-season.
All the fun stuff starts now.
The off-season is go. And that gives us lots more time. There's none of those pesky races that keep happening every other...
Getting in the way.
Yeah, there's none of that Friday, Saturday, Sunday business. It's just all work where it works. So hopefully we can deliver more promises, more changes, and a bigger, better side podcast this coming winter.
So that's the end of our race debrief and the end of the season.
We made it. It was looking a little bit shaky for a while, but we finally got there.
We did it.
And we've crowned one new World Drivers' Champion, one new World Constructors' Champion. And have we got anything else to look forward to?
We've got lots of good stuff coming up on Side Podcast, all kinds of reviews of the year, which may or may not be that good, and then lots of looking forward and seeing what's coming up next.
Okay, so it's non-stop.
Oh, it's always go at Side Podcast.
We're not going to break. The season may be over, but we're just getting started.